When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hi, I'm Andy Murray, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Well, hello and welcome to the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph. We come to you shortly after the men's singles final in Miami, which, of course, was won by Novak Djokovic, as was the women's title by Victoria Azarenka, as was the doubles title with Nicola Mahu and Pierre-Hugues Herbert, and I think also Bethany Mattek-Sands was in the women's doubles final. I don't actually know how that one ended up. But the reason I mention all this is because all of those players, Catherine Whittaker, also won in Indian Wells 2 weeks before. It is quite extraordinary.
It is extraordinary. Hello, David, by the way.
Hello.
It is extraordinary because so much time is spent by tennis commentators like you and I discussing and talking about how different the two events are and how at first glance they can look, you know, oh yeah, two back-to-back hardcore events, you know, momentum coming into the second one off the first one. But, you know, just, I mean, yeah, this year's a poor example for Andy Murray, but Andy Murray's past results at the two events are evidence enough of just how different they are, just how different the conditions are, how different the courts play. It is, you know, in the past, it's proven extremely difficult for anyone to do the Indian Wells Miami double. And that's just completely been blown out of the water by Victoria Azarenka, Novak Djokovic, Mattek-Sands and Herbert Mahu.
Correct. And the questions that we will be asking you all today, that I've been asking at Tennis Podcast on Twitter over the last 24 hours. First of all, Novak Djokovic, of course, just an extraordinary run that continues. His dominance of world tennis continues. And the question I've asked everybody is, who, if anyone, can come between him and a golden Grand Slam this year? It is an Olympic year. And the thing is, it's just not. It's barely competitive at the moment, Catherine. I mean, people are giving him a decent match. I think Dominic Thiem was excellent this week. He played really well and pushed Djokovic at points in a straight sets victory for the world number one. David Goffin played really well and pushed Djokovic for the odd moment here and there. I was quite disappointed that we didn't get to see Nick Kyrgios against Djokovic for the first time in the final, but that's because Nishikori played so well in the semi to beat Kyrgios. But then, despite going up a break early on in the final, yet again, it was fairly straightforward, 6-3, 6-3 for Djokovic. This is not really even close to being up for debate as to who's going to win these tournaments at the moment. Djokovic has only lost one match all year, and that was when he had to pull out halfway through because he had an eye infection.
Yeah, we don't count that match. I mean, that's to say that he's lost a match this year is a, I mean, he is unbeaten this year as far as I'm concerned. It's completely uncompetitive. I mean, all of those matches you mentioned, yes, they were the most competitive Novak Djokovic matches we've seen of late, but in all of them, as you know, Dominic Thiem impressed me, David Goffin impressed me, and yet there was never a single flickering moment in either or any of those matches that you've just mentioned where I even contemplated the prospect of Djokovic not winning them. And that was with those players playing really, really well. The same goes for the final today with Nishikori. And that tells you everything, I think. Yes, I, like the world of tennis, was salivating at the prospect of a Kyrgios-Djokovic matchup, you know, for really obvious reasons. We talk so much about how exciting he is, and he's just something different. He's something that Djokovic doesn't play every day. He's a shot maker, a la, you know, I talk a lot about how Wawrinka has set that template for how, if you're having your very, very best day, you might possibly go about beating Novak Djokovic. Well, Kyrgios is at least the sort of player that can have a very, very good day like that. But I mean, I was blown away by Nishikori in his match against Kyrgios. He made Kyrgios look redundant on the tennis court, really. Everything that had been brilliant for Kyrgios in all the other matches looked completely impotent. And I really felt foolish for predicting that Kyrgios would win that match, because Nishikori showed me, I mean, I've seen Nishikori be great before. I mean, obviously he reached that US Open final. He's done countless other really, really impressive things on the tennis court. But that was the first match for me that I really, really understood just why Kei Nishikori is so great, because he made a bit of a fool of Nick Kyrgios in that he exposed all of his weaknesses which I think with experience will be largely rectified, I should say. But I really fundamentally understood just why Kei Nishikori is such a brilliant tennis player in that match. And yet still today, he was just, I mean, completely in the shade for every step of that match. And it was still a decent performance from Nishikori. It wasn't, he didn't give a poor account of himself. It's just Novak Djokovic is as dominant a tennis player just at the moment as there has ever been at any one moment in time, I believe.
I would concur with that. I think the first time that I really thought, wow, Nishikori is something really special, isn't he? Was that US Open when he reached the final, because he beat Djokovic along the way, because he beat Wawrinka in the round previous to that with Wawrinka playing well. But the thing is, ever since that match that he beat Djokovic in, I've been waiting for it to happen again. And every time, Djokovic has pretty much wiped the floor with him. And he can't seem to reproduce it. On the subject of Kyrgios, I think this was another very, very important stepping stone in his development this week and a half he's had in Miami, because he got to the semi-finals. He beat some really good players along the way, including Miloš Raonic, which I thought was another very good win for him. But you're right. I think that what we're seeing, if you actually look at his career, there's a certain kind of player that causes Nick Kyrgios problems. Andy Murray, with his depth and his consistency. Kei Nishikori, with his striking from the baseline and his depth. And, well, the best in the world, one of the best ever, maybe the best ever at doing exactly that, is Novak Djokovic. So maybe Kyrgios and his supporters have been spared a little bit there, because I think Kyrgios needs to play these people to learn how to play these people. He did it with Thomas Burdick a few weeks ago at the Australian Open. He lost that match there. He then went and played him twice more and beat him pretty handily. And I think this is the way players like him operate. They soak up the experience, and yet they have the weapons to then turn it around in the future. I mean, yeah, he beat Nadal, of course, without having played him before, but I think there are really positive signs for Nick Kyrgios over the last few weeks. We've talked about them previously when he won the title in Marseille. I think he's going places this year. And a great piece, just to mark your cards, if you get a chance to read it, by Peter Bodo, very experienced American tennis writer, who wrote an article just headlined, Nick Kyrgios, the tennis player. And isn't it nice to talk about Nick Kyrgios, the tennis player?
Not many do. I need to read that article. Yeah, no, I mean, I don't think it's a negative thing that he's talked about for reasons besides tennis. I think 90% of the reasons besides the tennis that he's talked about are positive. I described him during my commentary for TalkSport in his match the other day as, it's like he's the antidote sent by the tennis gods to all of the ills, or all of the accused ills that are thrown at tennis. You know, the too much time between points, there aren't any personalities anymore, you know, there's no aggro on the court, there's no all of that kind of stuff, you know, points are too long, too many baseline rallies. It's like he has been sent as the antidote to all of those problems. And that's brilliant. That's just brilliant. And, you know, it's great that he's a personality. I don't think we should just put all of the non-tennis features of Nick Kyrgios into the negative column. I just wish he could learn not to stray on the wrong side of that line. And he is slowly learning, I think, with... There are setbacks, like, you know, what happened over the Davis Cup and so on. But I think the general trajectory is upward. And I think, you know, I was asking my brother what he thought of Nick Kyrgios last night and what he thought of his, you know, my brother usually doesn't have much time for sort of aggro on a tennis court, unlike you, David. Love a bit of aggro.
I want to play your brother, but I'm just going to bring the aggro. Okay, he's the better tennis player. I'm going to bring the aggro.
I can speak from experience, David, and tell you that it doesn't work. But he said, I love how unaffected he is. You know, I love how there's no, you know, he's sort of unpolished in that way, that he's giving you his internal monologue externally, sort of uncensored. And he's completely, you know, he's not a censored, polished machine. He just is what he is. And yes, that means he occasionally is... You know, behaves downright reprehensibly, but you know, maybe we just have to take that bit of rough with the smooth for the moment.
And doesn't he just make you smile when you watch him? I mean, I watch him for 5 minutes and I find myself smiling. And I was describing it the other day as the shot making, the audacious talent, the irritability of the man. He just can't handle so many things that are going on out there without having something to say about it. And, well, you know my thoughts on the bloke. I think he's great fun. Anyway, we were asking a question, weren't we? Who can come between Novak Djokovic and a Golden Grand Slam this year? Admittedly, he's only won one of those five tournaments so far, but all the odds suggest that he's going to go on and continue in this vein of form. Couple of comments on Twitter on this very subject. Vicky Spreadbury says, Novak Djokovic's biggest opponent will be himself, wanting the French Open or the Olympics too much. As for players, anyone who gets under his skin at the right moment, such as Stan. Vesterland says, Rafa in Paris or Andy at Wimbledon, that means Murray, of course, thinks that Andy Murray is 100% against Novak Djokovic on grass. Well, that is certainly correct. Ali says, and this is an interesting one, Catherine, Ali's always getting involved in our debates and often coming up with some very good points, says she expects a shock defeat at the US Open to an early on to a rising star, thinks that Djokovic will go on and win the gold medal, win Wimbledon, win the French Open, but end up losing to someone like Zverev or Fritz at the US Open.
I think interesting, but unlikely, personally. I think if he's got the three and plus the Olympics under his belt, the chances of him running aground at the US Open are even slimmer than they are usually of him winning a Grand Slam, personally. I mean, I think there's something in the theory of it could be an early, completely surprised defeat which thwarts him, if anything is going to. Personally, I think there's something in that. The question, what is going to come between Novak Djokovic and the Golden Slam, is, for me, seemingly nothing. And what I mean by that is that I think, if anything is going to, it's going to be something which we can't really predict. It's going to be a Söderling Nadal type incident, which nobody could possibly have predicted. I don't see anything foreseeable in the realms of the foreseeable coming between Novak Djokovic and the Golden Slam at the moment. Of course, injury can intervene. I think the French Open will be the biggest stumbling block, because I think mental factors, the like of which he even has never experienced before, will come into play there. But nonetheless, I think the most likely thing to intervene is an unexpected Söderling-like incident.
Yes, I think that's a fair shout. Incidentally, we should say Mr. Amazingly Ace says that I'd vote for Dominic Thiem.
Otherwise known as Mr. Modest.
Yeah, well, you know, Dominic Thiem will beat Novak Djokovic at the French Open. Danny says Kyrgios at Wimbledon. Emmanuel is going for Nadal at the French Open. We've got Shannon who reckons Federer or Murray at the Olympics. Everybody's having a go with somebody, but I don't know. I can't really see it, to be honest. I think he will fail at one of them just by law of averages, but goodness knows which one he will. I actually put out something that you will have absolutely loved, Catherine, a poll to ask how many of the following Novak Djokovic would win in 2016 out of the Grand Slam tournaments. How many would he get? We had 681 votes. That was a pretty popular poll. And... well,
you
the majority.
Polls, David.
Ugh. What?
Oh, the polls. The polls.
You know, I tell you what, why don't we do a poll about how many Grand Slams you're going to win? Anyway, four Grand Slam titles.
Low blow, David.
Four Grand Slam titles are going to be won by Novak Djokovic, says 35% of that group. 44% reckon three. 16% reckon he'll win only two. And 5% reckon he'll only win one and he won't win any more. I mean, what have they been smoking?
Yeah, I mean, stranger things have happened, but, yeah, those...
Like what?
Strange... within the realms of tennis? I mean...
Yes.
Stranger... what's the strangest thing that's ever happened in tennis? I mean, Thomas Johansson won the Australian Open.
You reckon it was less likely that Thomas Johansson would win the Australian Open once and Novak Djokovic will win any more Grand Slam titles this year?
Yes, I do. I think that was a more unlikely happening. I mean, as I said at the beginning of the year, the odds on Novak Djokovic doing the Golden Slam, I mean, bear in mind the Grand Slam has never been done on the men's side in the Open era, let alone the Golden Slam. We're 14-1. Trust me when I say the odds on Thomas Johansson winning that Australian Open at the start of the event were not 14-1.
That's not the question I asked. The question I asked was, which is more likely? Novak Djokovic won't win any more from where we are right now, any more slams this year, or Thomas Johansson winning the Australian Open?
Hang on, no, right. I've finally just understood your question. What's more okay than him not winning any more slams?
It is late. Ooh.
It is late. Thomas Johansson. That was no. I'd say still Thomas Johansson more unlikely. I needn't have exposed my failure to understand the question there because I do. I'm going to stick by my original response.
That is an absolutely absurd assertion that you think Thomas Johansson was a more surprising winner than if Novak Djokovic failed at all of the three remaining Grand Slam tournaments of this year. You think Thomas Johansson was a less likely winner than that set of scenarios for Novak Djokovic this year, him doing nothing else?
Hang on. No. There's a lot of double and triple negatives happening here. I think it is the most unlikely thing in all of these things that we've discussed is that Novak Djokovic doesn't win another Grand Slam this year.
I think we've finally found some agreement.
Okay, were we agreeing all along, David?
Crikey. Anyway, that was an interesting 4 minutes, wasn't it? Now, what else have we got to talk about?
Excellent radio. The inner workings of my mind.
Do you know, this is our 196th episode of The Tennis, but you can see why there are thousands and thousands listening to this, can't you? I mean, it's just must-listen material. Serena Williams didn't have the greatest week and a half, did she? Victoria Azarenka, frankly, is the player who looks like the world number one right now.
Yeah, do I get some credit for this time last week predicting both?
After the last 10 minutes, you don't get credit for anything.
No. Yeah, I do seem to have wiped out all my credit for any possible victories for the foreseeable future there. Yeah, she looks utterly formidable. I mean, I think there's something going on with Serena, which I think is likely to be temporary, personally.
But that's an interesting one. That's another question I've asked.
It is another question. I've muddied the waters here. Let me just finish. I mean, long story short, I think Azarenka has been formidable, incredible.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Great. Worthy of both titles and probably on balance the best player of 2016 on the women's side.
Question I've asked is this the beginning of the end for Serena Williams? She lost in the Australian Open final, surprisingly. She lost in the Indian Wells final to Victoria Azarenka, no disgrace in that, of course. And then she's lost to Svetlana Kuznetsova, who went on to reach the final. Very good player, but this is a tournament, Miami, that Serena has dominated in recent years. Well, throughout her career, this has been one of her very best tournaments of the lot. Is she slowly now starting to decline? And basically, is that going to continue? You think it's temporary from what you're saying?
I think it's the beginning of the end in that she's 34 years old. So, of course, the end logically is nigh at some stage relatively soon. But is it the beginning of the end in terms of is this just the start of a general downward spiral decline type thing? Towards, you know, a petering out of her career? Absolutely not. Serena Williams is not going to end her career that way. Even if her very best days are behind her, I still believe she can win another slam or two, not at her absolute best, just because of how amazing she is. And also, I just think with Serena, it's all in her hands. And
Really? Even with Victoria Azarenka playing at this level and with Serena Williams appearing to not be playing quite as well as she was last year?
I think Victoria Azarenka can mount a very, very strong challenge and will now beat her some of the time. I think she will be a very genuine rival to her, but probably quite an even rival to her. But I certainly don't think it's the case that Victoria Azarenka has now got the better of Serena Williams, and that's that. I think Serena will either retire because she feels she can't find it within her to muster what's necessary to win more slams, or she'll come back and win more slams. You know, she knows what she's capable of. She's not going to hang around out there just to peter away in a slow decline. So I don't see the decline continuing. I see something happening to arrest the decline, be it retirement or getting back to Grand Slam winning form.
This is what you lot think. Susie says, I think this may be a transition year, and when she loses a few matches, opponents lose their fear of her. I can see the point there. It certainly happened to Nadal, didn't it? Sarah says, yes, it is the start of the end, but it doesn't mean the end is coming soon. Michelle says, I still feel Serena is more likely to win another slam than Roger or Rafa. Thomas says, I doubt it, but she needs a slam this year or it will be. Wimbledon or the US Open are her best chance. Kimberly Matthews says no. She will still break the title record. It just may take her a little longer. She has faded and come back before. It will be so again. Vicky says, what a depressing thought. Obviously, she doesn't have that long left in her career, but I hope she has another slam in her. Sam just says, no. Scarlett says, I'm ready for it. Bring on the new champions. And Lee says, only if Serena's motivation has evaporated will she decline. Is the desire to beat Graf's record still strong? I'd say it's very, very strong. Ali says probably is the start of the end, but clay is her worst surface, so I don't think judgment can be made until Wimbledon, the Olympics and the US Open. And finally, we have Scott, who says logic indicates that we're closer to the middle of the end than the beginning. Oh, dear. Doesn't mean she won't still dominate for a while yet. Personally, Catherine, I think that Serena Williams is actually still playing very well. I mean, I saw the final of the Australian Open, and she was really hitting the ball hard. Well, still, I think the raw materials are still there. I just think she's just a bit off at the moment, and needs to find her rhythm, her timing, and get used to winning again. I think I'm not too concerned, quite honestly, for Serena Williams. Andy Murray, Catherine, you mentioned a little earlier the difficulties he has in Miami versus the way, or rather in Indian Wells, the way he usually plays in Miami. This time in Miami, he was all over the place as well. He won one match, had an argument in that, had that very strange situation where he was complaining about one of the balls from the women's tournament that are different to the men's, getting into the group of balls that they were using in the in his match, and asking about that. And then the next round he was grumpy as well and he lost. What did you make of it all?
I don't know. I mean, I struggle to read as much into it as everybody seems to be doing. These are just two results, and yes, it was very easy to write off the Indian Wells loss to Delbonis, because we've seen Andy Murray throughout his career suffer seemingly surprising defeats there. He just doesn't play well there, and it's getting to the point now where he knows he doesn't play well there. He goes in there thinking, I'm not going to be, you know. It's just a thing. It's just a feature of his career. Miami, as we've discussed, a completely different story. It's his second home. The conditions suit him down to the ground, etc., etc. And I'm a little bit uncomfortable with all this presumed narrative of, oh, he's had a baby and he looks a bit out of practice. And I mean, to the extent that he said after his match that he's struggling for a little bit of just finding the rhythm, you know, struggling to just get into the rhythm and even struggling for that on the practice court. I mean, that may be down to having had a baby. It may not be, but I'm slightly uncomfortable. It feels a bit sort of intrusive.
Yeah, I know what you mean on that one.
For me to make these assumptions. And, you know, I saw on Sky Sports News the other day, had a psychologist, a medical professional, discussing the impact of Andy Murray's new status as a father on his tennis career. And I just thought, this is all just completely bizarre and inappropriate. I mean, I absolutely understand why it's all happening. You know, we're all very interested in the career of Andy Murray, and this was a very surprising loss, and we're reaching for explanations and, most of all, reaching for reassurance of why this is only a temporary blip, I think. But I'm just a little bit uncomfortable with all of it.
Yes. Although it is not impossible that it may have something to do with it.
Of course it's not impossible. But, I mean, there are a million things that, I mean, you know, who knows what Roger Federer was going through in 2013? Or, you know, there are plenty of things in these people's private life that we will never know that have impact. And as I say, it's obviously completely understandable that we speculate. I just don't personally enjoy, or haven't enjoyed, this particular element of speculation, because I think it's pretty presumptuous, actually, to say it's simply the assumption that it's down to this. And of course it could be, but that's where it ends.
And I should also say, Catherine Whittaker, that having been around for the two arrivals in my life, the podcast didn't suffer, did they? I was on fire.
Look, maybe I'm being presumptuous because I've not been in that situation. But I think, you know, Matt, this is his job, and he's an incredibly professional person. You know, any suggestion that, you know, he might not be keeping up the same routine or anything, I find that almost a bit patronizing. I think that, you know, if somebody in the corporate world had just had a baby and, you know, there were sort of, oh, you know, draws of breath and glances like, oh, maybe he's, you know, not been able to put in this, you know, same amount of effort into the day job as usual because he's just had a baby, I'd think, you know, bog off. I'm doing everything the same, you know, just how dare you.
Can you explain bog off to the listeners of that are not British?
I think no explanation is, I can't explain it without using stronger language, David, but I think explanation is probably not required.
Okay. Yeah, interesting talking point. What do you lot think? Let us know at Tennis Podcast. We'll see how Andy Murray's next few weeks go. Clay court season is about to get underway. And it's great, isn't it? That shift in surface. I love all the shifts in surfaces. The one from hard to clay, clay to grass. It always just, I don't know, it feels like a change in the seasons of the year, the weather seasons, in a way, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. It's very bizarre how quickly it happens. You feel there should sort of be a period of respectful mourning for each period of the season, but no, it just rolls completely on. I'm sure there are certain people that absolutely cannot wait for it to roll on. Rafael Nadal, number one on that list. Probably Roger Federer, number two, just because he needs to play some tennis urgently. I can't wait for Indian Wells because it just, everything feels, for Monte Carlo even, because it's, everything is reset almost and back at zero. And any, Novak Djokovic aside, seemingly any credits you've built up or otherwise previously in the season can be rather put to the back of everyone's mind.
They can. That is all coming up over the next few weeks. Of course, incidentally, we talked about Victoria Azarenka, how good she was playing. Probably the player that pushed her the closest was Johanna Konta, wasn't she? She played really well, certainly for a set.
True story. Yeah, I would say absolutely the most competitive match that Victoria Azarenka played last week was against Johanna Konta. That was the only one where, you know, like I was saying with Djokovic, where there was just a flicker of a moment here and there where I thought just possibly, you know, Jo Konta could get into this and really mount a challenge. She wasn't quite able to, but there were definitely flickers. And that's a really, really big deal, I think. I mean, that she just continues to just cement herself in her new status. There doesn't seem to be any wavering or, you know, I'm loath to use Kerber, Angelique Kerber, as an example of somebody that is wavering in their new status, because I think it's completely all understandable and I just don't want anything to detract from the brilliance of her achievement. But, you know, she is, I think, as we said, after she lost in Indian Wells, her previous defining feature was her consistency in this level of event and I suppose at Grand Slam level, reaching quarterfinals, etc. And for her to be losing when she is, yes, she lost to the eventual champion this time, but still, you know, there is definitely a slight difference to pre-Australian Open. There is definitely a glimmer of a waiver, whereas Jo Konta, you know, at a slightly lower level, is coping mentally and physically with her new status just unbelievably well.
It will be interesting to see how that impacts when we get to Wimbledon, won't it? Because suddenly she will arrive at Wimbledon and there will be a lot of eyes on her that she's never had before at that particular tournament.
Yeah, and she'll arrive there seeded as well, with people talking about or possibly even, probably even, expecting her to make a run into the second week. And that's a very, very different kettle of fish.
It is. We have also seen, I don't know whether you saw it today, I certainly did, an article written by John Isner on the wonderful Players Tribune, which is something that we've talked about before, Mardy Fish's piece. Andy Murray's written a couple on there where it's just self-penned pieces, an opportunity for athletes to just speak their mind. John Isner's today was rather different. It was about WrestleMania and American wrestling. Did you read that, Catherine?
I haven't yet. It's
really good.
I have it as a tab open on my laptop at the moment, ready to read. My interest in wrestling is so minimal, I've been struggling to muster the motivation to read it. But I've got enough
interest for both of us, okay. So don't worry. I can carry the tennis podcast interest but mine's a bit old school. I was more WWF rather than WWE. Does that make any sense to you?
It does, yeah. I'm certainly familiar with the vernacular, David.
Anyway.
Enjoy it as a spectacle.
Yeah, I was more of a sort of Macho Man Randy Savage kind of guy. Yeah?
Yeah. I mean, in spirit only, presumably.
Well, yeah, I suppose so. But the the fact is that John Isner has been telling us about his absolute love of the WWE, the World Wrestling Entertainment Federation, whatever you want to call it. And the most interesting bit for me, he was basically saying tennis stars as WWE stars, and he was coming up with all sorts of examples like Novak Djokovic being Bret Hitman Hart, who was known as the Excellence of Execution. Wonderful. And there was Shawn Michaels, who would have been Federer, and he himself would have been the Undertaker, this big lumbering galoot who just comes along and seems impervious to pain and isn't very flexible. But my personal favourite bit of the entire piece was when he reminded everybody, or told everybody, and certainly reminded me, of how Roger Federer is a huge fan of American wrestling and does impersonations of the various wrestlers.
I mean, well, that does sound like something I would desperately, desperately want to see. That's just tantalising, though, telling us about that, knowing that none of us will ever see that in our lifetimes. That's just unfair.
Except that I have. I have seen it.
Oh, David, was this
I
all...
I have seen it back in the day. Here's some name dropping for you.
For you to work bit, that yeah. into conversation.
It's the only reason I'm telling this story is so that I can regale you with my story of 1998 through 2000 when I was an ATP communications manager. And Roger Federer would have been, what, 16, 17 years old? And he was forever watching American wrestling and coming up and doing impersonations of the actors, as we later found out that they were. I thought it was all real, to be honest, until, you know, they admitted that it wasn't. But anyway, yeah, great stuff, isn't it? Who'd have thought it? Roger Federer, he's so sort of, he's got such serene, like, as a facade, and yet here he was doing impersonations of American wrestlers. Brilliant.
I've no comment to that.
No. Should we end the tennis podcast there, or
on a wrestling based note?
Yeah,
that's what the listeners. I will give you it's all that wrestling chat.
Yeah, they do. They want wrestling anecdotes. We have got a bit of news because Milos Raonic and Nick Kyrgios have just joined Andy Murray, Rafael Nadal and Stan Wawrinka in the field at the Aegon Championships at the Queen's Club. Kyrgios and Raonic, they could be very dangerous on grass this year, Catherine.
Oh, they could. Well, I mean, both have been very dangerous on grass in the past. So,
and Raonic is reckoning that he will have his best results this year on grass that he's ever had. And bear in mind, he's already reached a semi-final at Wimbledon.
Well, he's had his best results this year that he's ever had. So why wouldn't that carry through until the grass court season? So, yeah, I mean, he's somebody that everybody wants to avoid on grass, I would say. And that's the same goes. Probably the two, actually, most dangerous, besides the obvious, they're the two most dangerous on grass, for sure. Probably even as much as the obvious two. Besides Djokovic.
And you know what? Actually, thinking about it now, just throwing back to that who will stop Novak Djokovic doing the Golden Slam. If he were to run into one of those two guys at Wimbledon, I would have a sneaky little feeling for either one of them. I really would.
You'd have a feeling for Raonic against Djokovic at Wimbledon?
I would. Yeah, I really would.
Okay, I wouldn't. But I mean, I think he could get a set, and I think a lot could change between now and Wimbledon. And
don't you remember what Kevin Anderson did to Novak Djokovic?
Yeah, he got a couple of sets. So I think Raonic could do the same. He didn't win in the end.
Oh, we see he's gone from 1 to 2 in the space of about 48 seconds.
I think there is a scenario in the multiverse. I think there is a universe in which Milos Raonic gets a couple of sets. I don't think there's one where he wins, unless something significant changes. I'm talking about if we played Wimbledon tomorrow. Unless something significant changes, I don't see it happening.
We shall see. We shall see. It's all to come still in the rest of the tennis year. Catherine Whittaker and myself, Davey Law, have enjoyed talking to you. We hope you've enjoyed listening to us. This has been the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph. We'll speak to you soon.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.